Hello everyone. Welcome to DC Cats Driven Podcast. We are very excited today because we have with us the Lieutenant Governor LG of North Dakota. You're right. We have with us the Lieutenant Governor of North Dakota, Tammy Miller. And Tammy, prior to becoming the LG of North Dakota, she was the Chief Operating Officer at the Governor's Office. And prior to that, she was with Border States, the sixth largest electrical distributor in the US. And she also worked there for 14 years as a CEO. It's such an honor to be chatting with you, Tammy. And thanks so much for joining DC Cabs Driven Podcast.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
Tammy, I was trying to read a little bit about you online in preparation for this interview. And you grew up in a small town in North Dakota. And now you're the Lieutenant Governor of the state. You know, it's quite an inspirational journey. I'm just curious to know about your early years growing up as a kid or as a teenager. Did you always have these big aspirations to be in office or to become the CEO and all that? How was Tammy as a little girl growing up?
Well, growing up, my parents lived 1 mile out of the town of Brockett. The population in Brockett today is 34 people. So very small community. I went to elementary school there in Brockett and had six kids in my class, and then went to Lakota for high school and graduated with just over 40 in my high school class. But growing up, we had really humble household and humble roots. My parents were in business with my grandfather early on. My grandfather had a lumber yard and hardware store. My dad worked there. It was right across from the elementary school. And my grandparents also lived right across from the elementary school. So saw my grandparents every day. And generally had a meal with them almost every day as well. So when people say it takes a village, it really did. And my grandparents were very involved in that. With my parents having interest in a small family business, I learned very quickly the importance of working hard and doing any job that was needed to serve customers. And that has come in very handy throughout my career. Also understood work ethic, honesty, and also giving back to the community. Even though my parents didn't have a lot of money, we always were giving back to the community in kind with our time or when they could with money. So that has always stuck with me and continue to give back to the communities where we live.
That's a very inspirational, Tammy. And growing up with grandparents is a lot of fun. And as you said, it teaches you a lot of things and you get to also learn history and all that. That's amazing. But then I'm
it
just
does.
Curious.
And it's interesting because my grandparents were always very old to me. My grandmother was 44 when my dad was born. So they were always older, but we just learned so much from them. And it was so wonderful to have them in our lives.
That's awesome. Then I'm just curious. A lot of people, you had a very successful career, but then, you know, you finish college and all that, you finish school, but you want to go out to a big state, work there, but you decided to stay where you are from, you stuck to your roots. Can you talk us through the thought process? What made you stay in North Dakota?
Absolutely. So I went across the border to Minnesota for college and have an undergraduate degree in accounting and an MBA from Minnesota State University in Moorhead. When I graduated, I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I had had an internship in public accounting. So I applied for full-time work in public accounting and landed with a really good firm in Fargo called Charles Bailey at the time. I worked there for 8.5 years, primarily as an auditor. I don't think I mentioned it, but I am a CPA and I continue to maintain that CPA licensure today. I think it's just really a great foundational background and the continuing ed CPE requirements are really good to keep you fresh in all those areas of accounting and tax. So I took that job with Charles Bailey and it happened to be in Fargo. I did have this little desire in me for a long time to move to a big city. So really to satisfy that, when my husband and I got married, we lived in Fargo. Most of our friends went to the lakes in Minnesota for the weekends. Instead, we had an apartment and then a condo in Minneapolis. So that's how we kind of satisfied that need for the big city. When our friends would go to the lakes on the weekend, we would go to Minneapolis for the weekend. I did have an opportunity to live in a big city after I started with Border States. Before I became the CEO, I was asked to be the general manager for the Southwest region. So my husband and I relocated to Phoenix and I ran the Southwest region out of Phoenix with branches in Phoenix, Tucson, Albuquerque, Farmington, New Mexico, El Paso, Texas, and Juarez, Mexico. really enjoyed that job opportunity, liked all of the entertainment aspects in the Phoenix Metro, but really missed North Dakota. Missed knowing people and feeling like as an individual, you could make a difference. So I was excited to be promoted to CEO at Border States in 2000. Well, the appointment came in 2005, started in the position on January 1st of 2006, and then relocated back to North Dakota.
No, that's great. You know, coming back to your roots and you've traveled the country, that's really interesting. Talking about border states, you became the CEO in 2006 and you remained CEO for 14 years and you stayed with the company for 30 years. It requires a lot of patience. And also, when you became the CEO, the company was doing a little under 500 million in revenue. By the time you left after 14 years, you guys ended up doing a little over 2.5 billion. Give us some CEO advice and what did you do?
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about that almost 30-year journey. So I had been in public accounting, was great experience, but after 8.5 years, decided that I wasn't going to spend the rest of my career in public accounting. I was being asked to join the partnership. And if you become a partner in a public accounting firm, that's generally the rest of your career path. So in the fall of, let's see, it would have been the fall of 1990, I reached out to Border States, one of my audit clients. Their CFO was 60 and a half years old. And I called the president and I said, "What are you going to do when Dean retires?" And they said, "You know, we really haven't talked about succession." So they brought me in. They knew me because I had been the auditor, was trusted as the auditor. We had a number of interviews. They didn't post the position. I don't think they interviewed anyone else. And I became the accounting manager and worked with Dean for a year and a half until he retired. And then you say, have a lot of patience, but I didn't really ever feel impatient in any of my roles because the company was always changing and growing. And especially when the company was smaller, we were involved in every aspect of the business and it was always a new challenge. So I never felt stagnant or impatient as I was on that journey to CEO. And then it was really a life-changing move when I moved to Phoenix to run the Southwest region because I had never worked in the field. I had always worked in the corporate office, which is very different than leading a branch and then being responsible for six branches. So, very, very exciting opportunity and very rewarding opportunity. You asked kind of about the growth and some advice there. When I became the CEO, an individual named Gary Miller was named president, same last name, not related. And then we had another individual who was running operations named Greg Thrall. We were all kind of new to those leadership roles when we took over. So we brought in some consultants who helped us put together a new strategic plan for the company. And we knew that the company needed to grow. We wanted to be more relevant to our customers and vendors. And we wanted to give our employee owners, Border States is 100% employee owned through an ESOP. We wanted to give the employee owners a better return on their stock at Border States. So we put together the strategic plan. And with that plan, we determined we needed to double in size in 5 years. That would get us to $1 billion. We put together that plan. We put together the four overarching goals and action items. And in the action items, we were very deliberate about making sure that every employee owner, regardless of position, could see something in that plan that they could influence to help us achieve that goal of being $1 billion in 5 years. And I'm very excited to say we had a good communication plan. We had good accountability. Even with the Great Recession, we still accomplished our $1 billion goal in 5 years. And then after that, we just continued to build on that strategy. And then with that success, a lot of smaller family businesses saw Border States, saw how we treated employee owners, customers, how we work with vendors, and they wanted to be a part of it. So many owners reached out to us about buying their companies. So when we look at our growth, about half of it was M&A and half of it was organic.
Oh, it's a great journey. I mean, a lot of lessons there. You know, in a couple of minutes, you shared quite a bit, and it's really, really interesting. So you really worked hard. You know, you had a foot on the ground, and you got to make some strategic decisions. Yeah, very, very interesting, and yeah,
And I
great.
think a key to that too, with that strategic plan, was communication and transparency and empowering every employee owner to be a part of it. And I think the employee owners were super engaged and continue to be because they understand the vision, and they know the impact that will have on customers, vendors, and them personally.
Right. And you were also the first woman to lead the National Association of Electrical Distributors, NAED, in its 100-year history. And you also received the NAED Women in Industry Trailblazer Award. So what was it like? And tell us about women in distribution. How has that changed over the years? And what advice would you give for women out there who also have similar aspirations to grow up their career chain?
Absolutely. So I was very fortunate when I joined Border States. The CEO was Paul Madsen, a great, great friend and mentor still to this day. He was very supportive of every leader, and it was all based on your ability, not gender, race, anything else. And I remember going to my first NAED conference. It was in San Francisco in the 90s, and we were walking the ballroom floor where the booth sessions were going on. And another gentleman from a different electrical distribution company came up and said, "Well, Paul Madsen, aren't you lucky? You've got to bring your secretary to this conference." And, you know, those roles are extremely important, but no one should assume that women can only be secretaries, nurses, and teachers. So Paul, who was a great supporter of mine, said, "You need to meet this person. Her name is Tammy Miller. She's the smartest person in our organization." So that's the environment that I grew up in at Border States, had that support all the time, and was given opportunities because people believed in me, and it didn't matter what gender. As I got into NAD, I started early on in with the area meetings and then the regional work and then national, served on the board for a number of years. And I was asked to serve as the board chair, and I had just become the CEO at Border States. That was new to me. We were just moving back from Phoenix to North Dakota, and I just was thinking this is not the right time. And then a couple of mentors who were manufacturers in the electrical distribution space said, "Tammy, you need to do this, and you need to do it now for the industry." So like a lot of things, I said, yeah, yes, and you know, figured it out later, which is my motto for a lot of things. Say yes, figure it out later. So I did agree to do that. And it was really a very remarkable experience. And the timing was great because the economy was fabulous. It was the 100th year of NAED. We had a fabulous conference, and it was just really a great opportunity for me. And we also got some traction with the Women in Industry group, and we had our first, you know, national conference for women in industry and had about 100 women at that first conference. And I think that jump started a lot of interest and hopefully inspired more women to pursue opportunities in electrical distribution. And I think electrical distribution is a great industry for anyone, really great opportunities. And you can find just about any job in electrical distribution. So I continue to encourage women to look at those non-traditional careers. And I think maybe one of the most rewarding things for me was shortly before I left Border States, we were talking about the Women in Industry Conference, and there were a few people at Border States that said, women, who said, "Why do we even need it? We're all treated equally now anyway." So I think we've made really great progress. And I know when I left, and I assume it is continuing, that we are seeing more and more women at every local, regional, and national conference for the electrical distribution industry.
No, well said, Tammy. Yeah, definitely, right? These conferences have more women now, and also the distribution industry is growing and more women are getting into distribution. That's very encouraging, and it's great to see as well. But switching,
and I haven't been at a Women in Industry conference for a while, but I think I have seen or heard that they've been like sold out with, you know, literally hundreds, multiple hundreds of women at these events.
So switching gears a little bit, Tammy, you're having a very successful career. Things are going well. You're the CEO. You grew the company like 4 times or 5 times. And then you get into public service. You join the governor's office as the chief operating officer. How did that transition happen? Or did you always have aspirations, or did you always have an inclination to join the government or public service?
Well, I wouldn't say I've always had some aspiration to be in public service, but I have always had a deep passion to give back to organizations, the state, areas that have been so good for me and my family and businesses I've been part of. In 2016, Governor Burgum was first elected as governor. I knew the governor in Fargo, where we both were involved with large businesses. We had worked on some projects together, including the Valley Prosperity Partnership, where we were trying to bring more research, committed water supply, and work on the workforce for our Red River Valley on the eastern side of the state. So knew the governor very well, and he became governor. In 2018, he had talked to me about working on a couple of things with his office, but the timing didn't work. At Border States, I had a very well-defined succession plan. You can imagine, I worked at Border States most of my adult life and was the CEO for 14 and a half years. So that was my baby for a long time. And I wanted to make sure we had a rock-solid succession plan when I left and that the growth and success would continue for the employee owners. So I had a 3-year succession plan that we worked on, and that plan was to be completed on March 31st of 2020. So the governor had talked to me about a couple of opportunities, but in July of 2019, he asked if I wanted to be the chief operating officer. The individual who was in that position wanted to retire. And I said, oh, I'd love to do that work, but I really have to keep my commitment to Border States so we can wrap up the succession plan on March 31st of 2020. So the individual who was the chief operating officer and the governor said, you know what, we can make this work. And for my last 6 months at Border States, I was planning to be out of the office, but available. Just wanted to kind of be out of the way so the new team could be taking over. So those last 6 months, I started volunteering in the governor's office. And then I retired from Border States on March 31st of 2020, started in the governor's office the next day on April 1. That was a Wednesday. And I think everyone knows what was happening in early 2020, COVID. So a lot of the work that I did my first 2 years as chief operating officer was help manage our COVID response in the state of North Dakota. And the other big part of my job as a chief operating officer was working very directly with cabinet leaders. So our cabinet agencies are like Department of Transportation, Health and Human Services, Game and Fish, Parks and Rec, financial institutions, security, National Guard, Highway Patrol, the list goes on. So I work very closely with those agencies to help them work as one, deliver more value to our citizens. And then if we do have an opening in any of those executive roles, I do the recruiting and the interviewing and make a recommendation on the governor for a final candidate to interview and then for appointment to the position. Now, as lieutenant governor, most lieutenant governors don't do this, but I did retain that relationship and those duties with the cabinet leaders because we have such a great team and it just helps me do my job better too in this role.
No, it's great. You know, it's a great way to transition. So 6 months, you just turn off everything and you be available. Hey, if you need me, I'm there. And then you go volunteer at the governor's office. You also learn the new job and all that. I think that's a great way to transition, Tammy. And thanks for the great work there, especially in 2020 when COVID hit and all that. It's not an easy situation to get on to a new job, and you know, you just hit the ground running. So great, and thank you for the great work there. But
Thank
then
you.
I'm just curious, right? In 2018, the US Senate election, you considered running against Heidi Heitkamp, but then you opted out not to run. Is that a reason for that, or is that just the
And that all
responsibility?
tied back to that succession plan I had laid out at Border States. It was something that I was interested and wanted to gather more information for perhaps a future opportunity, but that timing in 2018 just didn't work out for me with my succession plan at Border States.
That makes sense, yeah. And how, I mean, you have been a very successful CEO, but how are these lessons as a CEO helping you do your job right now?
Well, you know, I say, you know, the governor's role and the lieutenant governor role in large part are like being the president and CEO of a large company. So we have very different agencies that we work with, kind of like branches at Border States. So to have those different entities work as one and really work as a state, not a siloed agency, that experience in the past with Border States has been very helpful. You know, knowing how to manage a multi-billion-dollar budget is really helpful. Not a lot of people have had experience with multi-billion-dollar budgets, and the state does have a multi-billion-dollar budget, as you can imagine. The other thing is, At Border States, we acquired a lot of companies and integrated them. So after the acquisition, they really became Border States. And a lot of those concepts that we use in M&A work are very applicable in state government as we try to work as one. And then it became even more specific. We merged our Department of Health, which is our largest agency in the state, with the, I should say, the Department of Human Services, which is the largest agency in the state, with the Department of Health. So I was the executive sponsor for that whole integration of those two agencies. And we completed that on September 1st. And then we have a lot of other initiatives where we're trying to kind of take the friction out of doing business with state government. So I'm the executive sponsor for a project called the Business Gateway. We tried to get funding for this project since 2005, and we finally did this last legislative session. So as a business, you can imagine working with state government, you work with the tax department, with workforce safety, with job service, with commerce, with Secretary of State, and others. If you deal with them online, you have a unique password, user ID. You have to put your information in for each of those agencies. It's a lot of non-value work. So we're working on building this business gateway. So when you come to work with the state as a business, it's a one stop for all of your solutions. So we're working on that right now. And then we're also working on phase two of what we call red tape reduction. I think a lot of people generalize and say there's a lot of red tape working with government. So we are very deliberately getting feedback from our team members as well as from all constituents in North Dakota to figure out how to reduce red tape. And during our last legislative session this spring, we had over 50 bills that were introduced and then eventually signed by the governor to reduce red tape in our state. We launched Red Tape Reduction 2.0 just recently, and we're continuing to build that culture of red tape reduction within our team members and then also soliciting a lot of input from the citizens of North Dakota.
This is great, Tammy, but who comes up with all these great ideas, right? Does it come from you or the governor or the people, or how do you
Well, you know
source the
what?
ideas?
It's a kind of all of the above. And some of these ideas have been percolating for sometimes decades. And I think a lot of our leaders didn't have maybe the experience to really tell the story to the legislators to make sure we could get the funding when it was time to ask. So about 2 years ago, we brought in some consultants that helped us be better storytellers. And we're using a lot of those techniques to start early with our stories. And I think we've been much more effective in gaining awareness and understanding of the needs in the state, and then getting some of these projects that have been, talked about for decades funded. So the Business Gateway is one. Another is our update for our job service, our unemployment claims processing. Our technology there is was first implemented in 1976, and we're finally replacing that system. We'd got the funding this last legislative session.
Yeah, I was reading through your digital transformation journey as well for the state. It's very impressive. But then, executing at a private enterprise is a different thing, and executing at a government is a completely different ball game. How do you make sure that these ideas get executed, right? Because these are great ideas, but then at the end of the day, it needs to be really executed well, and that's what you're working on. How do you make sure that it gets executed? Because that's where a lot of governments suffer, right?
Well, in so many ways, it's not different at all. You have to make sure that you have good leaders, that they are empowered, they have the resources, and you have accountability. I think that's true in the private sector or in the government sector. I think one thing that is different is our legislative session only meets every 2 years. And so planning on that 2-year cycle is very different than in private industry. And in private industry, if you had a good idea, you could generally find a way to come up with the funding, even if it was in the budget. That's not always true in government. So sometimes it's a little bit slower to get the resources that you need. But I think on the execution side, it's very similar. And, sometimes I think people have a misconception about the quality of talent in state government. I am amazed at the quality of team members we have working in the state of North Dakota. I would put them up against any team in the country.
That's great, right? And I mean, it's very impressive. So another question I have for you is, see, I mean, you are a very accomplished executive and the lieutenant governor of the state. But how do you stay grounded, or how can people approach you? Because sometimes, I mean, you're very approachable, you know, it was easy to get coordinated with you. And, you know, I mean, I didn't expect to be talking to the Lieutenant Governor of North, you know, today, right? I was not expecting to talk to the Lieutenant Governor. But how do you stay connected with people, right? One thing is, hey, execution, this big vision and all that. But at the end of the day, you know, you also need to be, you have to stay connected with the people. How do you stay connected?
Well, first of all, I'm very curious and very interested in people. I love to meet people and visit with people, but I think it really comes back to my roots growing up. I mean, my parents are very humble. They're good to everyone, regardless of where they are at in life. And at the end of the day, I am still the same person I was 5 years ago, even though I have a different title. So I think we can all do more to accomplish our purpose and make a difference if we are approachable, curious, and remain humble.
Great, thank you. And you talked about jobs, and I mean, a lot of kids are graduating and people graduating out of college. But how do you make sure that these people stay in North Dakota, or let's say they leave, but then they come back just like how you did? What do you do to ensure that?
Well, our state is in great shape and we have tons of great jobs. Our biggest challenge is workforce. So we are exactly addressing the topic you just mentioned, doing everything we can to connect with those students who are graduating soon, to make them aware of all of the great opportunities in the state, and to make them aware that we want them to stay in the state. I think for years, no one really talked to parents and kids about the great opportunities and our desire to retain them in the state. We also have a lot of programs where we are trying to attract talent from outside of the state. And we also just recently set up an Office of Immigration within Commerce to help attract international workforce as well.
That's interesting. I think that'll be of interest to a lot of people across the world, I would think.
Well, I was just at a glass manufacturing company in the state yesterday, and they have 35 different countries represented in their plant. And they have about 300, just over 350 team members. So lots of great diversity, which is so fun to see in our state.
Diversity is great. It makes all the difference. But North Dakota is also a significant player in the energy sector. But how do you balance the state's economic interest in energy with climate change, sustainability concerns, and all that? And how do you do that?
Absolutely. So you're right. We like to say we feed and fuel the world in North Dakota. Certainly, the fossil fuel industry and agriculture are our two biggest industries. We produce about 1.2 million barrels of oil a day. When we have lots of great crops, we lead the country in the production of many crops. So, all that said, there is no one more passionate about clean air, healthy soil, and clean water than the citizens of North Dakota. And we are working on solutions for sustainability through innovation versus regulation. We have very innovative people who have found ways to almost eliminate flaring of natural gas. We're finding new consumers of natural gas. We're finding ways to sequester carbon. And we just were awarded a huge grant to work on a hydrogen hub with three other states to use hydrogen as another form of energy. So in North Dakota, we like to say we have an all of the above energy policy, and we're getting there through innovation.
Great. A couple of last questions. I know we are out of time here. What is your experience like working with Governor Doug Burgum?
Well, our governor is the most visionary and inspiring person I know and have ever worked with. He really can set the vision. He has a way of inspiring and stretching everyone to do their best and do more. And he is the state's biggest cheerleader. It's just fun to be part of this team.
Great. And yeah, he was also the CEO. He founded Great Plains. That was interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. And tell us some productivity tips or productivity hacks, right? So, how are you able to do so much? And do you have any tips for us or the audience?
Absolutely. First of all, effectively use your calendar. If you want to do things, make sure it's on your calendar. And that includes making time to keep yourself healthy. I think anyone who knows me knows that I am absolutely a fitness fanatic. I work out pretty much every day, lift weights, and run. I try to run 1,000 miles every year and am on track to meet that goal this year. I know so many people who say, I travel, I do this, I do that. I don't have time to exercise. I said, everyone has time to squeeze in 30 minutes a day. So I think that is so important because then you are fit for duty. You're feeling good, you're alert. I work out in the morning. I use that time when I'm working out to kind of strategize some of the things that I have going on during the day. So that dedicated fitness time every morning is really helpful for me. And then it really helps to have some good staff too who manage my calendar.
That's great. Yeah. And so stay healthy, use your calendar well, have great staff, great
And
advice.
then maybe another thing, and I mentioned this at a leadership conference probably a month and a half ago. It's okay to say no. Sometimes we feel really guilty if we have to say no, but if you can't really give it your best and if you're not interested, sometimes it's okay to say no.
Yeah, say no. Well said. And thanks for not saying no to us, Tammy.
Wanted to do it.
Cool. And Tammy, I would like to end with this question. I mean, do you have time to read books? And what book are you reading right now?
Well, actually, I am really an impatient person. So it's hard for me to read a book from cover to cover. But we have a large Native American population in North Dakota. About 10% of our population is Native American. And I think they have really beautiful, rich history. So I have been reading books on our Native American culture and lifestyle here in North Dakota. Recently read a book about Sakakawea. I think a lot of folks know about her role. And then the book that I have right now that I'm reading is about building earth lodges. And it is amazing the work that the women did as they built earth lodges on the in these tribal communities. Besides that, I have another book that I'm queued up to read. It's about predictability. And I serve on the state investment board as the chair. So our chief investment officer recommended that. And that's a book I'm very interested in reading too. Next.
That's great. Tell me another book I'm reading right now is called The Nudge. It's written by Richard H. Thaler and Cass R. Sunstein. It's a great book. You know, it talks about how do you nudge people to do things. And you know, it might be
Excellent.
a good read for you as well, especially in
Excellent. Thank you
philosophy.
for that tip.
So Tammy, I just want to say thank you. I mean, I have a lot more questions, but we are out of time. You're a very busy person, but thanks for making time for us. We absolutely enjoyed chatting with you, and it was great to learn more about your vision for North Dakota and how you are attracting talent, your immigration policies, diversity. There were a lot of learning, and your career journey is inspiring, not just for women, but for everybody out there. And there's a lot we can learn. And also, the way you transition from one thing to another is also very interesting and exciting. I just want to say a big thank you. Thank you for joining the Driven podcast. And thanks a lot. It means a lot to us. Thank you.
Thank you. My
Thank you.
pleasure.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Driven Podcast. Check out our other episodes for more and subscribe to be the first to access every new episode.